Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Steve Dahl, a.k.a. Zippy, from the Perch Patrol Guide Service on. This is Zippy's first time on the podcast. I've known Zippy now for the better part of a decade. I suppose by now, probably at least 10 years. When I first started working for Jason Mitchell Outdoors Productions, you know, anybody that knows the two, anybody that knows Jason, anybody that knows anything about Zippy's career, you know, those guys are intertwined. Zippy, he got his start and launched the Perch Patrol back in the mid-90s. We hear all about it in this interview, but it's very entertaining to hear these stories about how Zippy and the guys that were around back then got their start and how the Perch Patrol was essentially formulated. And then just the fishing stories about Devil's Lake. I mean, Devil's Lake is just a total anomaly. The story of it coming up, the water levels coming up during the wet cycle back in the 80s and 90s. And, you know, at that time, I mean, these guys were some of the first guides on the lake, and they really, you know, they were there when things started booming, and they were the cause of a lot of it. I mean, these guys were promoting this fishery, and they were the ones out there pioneering these bites and finding fish and you know, discovering all this new water and all these new patterns and all this new stuff. Really crazy stuff. Really, really fun stories to listen to. So, yeah, I just, you know, this particular interview, it's a little bit different because it's a lot of storytelling. It's a lot of reminiscing, and it is so entertaining and so much fun. And I feel like we need more of these. We need more, you know, almost like documentaries, if you will, like this, where we're just really sort of, you know, lay down some of this history, because it won't be long and, you know, it'll be hard to remember, or, you know, the details will be gone and the texture of these conversations will be lost if we don't start, you know, really documenting this stuff. And so it was a really just a privilege to be able to take up, you know, an hour or so of Zippy's time and hear the beginnings of his career. And it won't be the last time I got a ton more questions for him, because we really only cover the first handful of years of his career in this interview. So, yeah, really, really fun. We're talking about Devil's Lake and the Perch Patrol with Steve Dahl. Zippy, let's get it started. The spring open water fishing season is upon us here in North Dakota. And a few things to remember as anglers when we're getting our boat out for the first time, especially on the river systems: the dangerously cold water temperatures. Fishing is all about having fun. Some of the most phenomenal fishing opportunities are going to be happening now for the next couple of months. Be prepared for some of those mild emergencies. Definitely be wearing your life jacket. It can be life and death in a bad situation. Clean, drain, dry is always the program here in North Dakota. For new rules and regulations for the 2024 open water season, check all that out at North Dakota Game and Fish website, gf.nd.gov/fishing. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. We'll start here. Buttons are all pushed. Red lights are flashing. We're gonna start right here. Now, Zippy, I'm gonna call you Zippy like we've been longtime friends, and hopefully that doesn't offend you. But
not at all.
Zippy, this is your first time on. I just wanna hear a little bit of like your origin story, like where you were born and raised, how you got into fishing, like even like some of that childhood stuff, anything meaningful that you remember going as far back as you care to, just to kind of, you know, I want to kind of get to know you. I mean, we're going to talk about your professional career. We're going to talk about fishing. We're going to talk about Devil's Lake and hear all the stories, as many as we can. But that origin story, man, like, I don't think I've ever been told that. Like, I don't even know where you were born and raised or how you got into fishing. Cause you're not an old man, but you're old enough to remember, you know, before Devil's Lake was as big and awesome as it is now. So I imagine there's more to your story than just Devil's Lake. I want to hear about it, man. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, Taylor, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here. My story, I was born and raised here in Devil's Lake, North Dakota. I grew up, my dad farmed, and I've come from a farm family, but I grew up here, and in my spare time, I did a lot of fishing. My dad was always busy working on the farm. in his prime years. So my grandpa, fortunately, had kind of retired what I would consider kind of young. You think he was like 58 or something, and 55, I can't remember. But my grandpa had a lot of time, and he loved fishing. And so, you know, my grandparents would come here. They lived in Park River, which is 75 miles from Devil's Lake, northeast of here. And so they would come here, and, you know, grandma would hang out with my mom, and grandpa would pick me up and take me fishing. And a lot of it was from shore. You know, we did a lot of fishing for northerns, probably more than anything. There wasn't that many walleyes to be caught back then. But, you know, it was, I remember about two or three times a summer, he would, you know, once my dad was able to maybe come fishing, or my brother, who's 10 years older than me, would come with, and he would rent a boat from the old boatyard, which would be across from where Woodland is, across the Creel Bay from where Woodland. And actually, Kyle Blanchfield used to work at that boatyard. And that's kind of where he got the whole idea of people's needs and listening to what their wants were. And that's how he got the idea to get into talk his parents into starting Woodland Resort. So that alone is a fascinating story. But, you know, so, you know, two or three times a summer, it'd be quite a treat to be in one of these 16-foot Crestliner boats with a 25-horse Burke motor on the back, and just opened up more opportunities to than you had from shore. So, but that's kind of how I grew up, you know, fishing. And, of course, my friends that I hung around with and in grade school and middle school and high school, they fished too. And we were kind of bridge rats. You know, there's a lot of bridges throughout the Devil's Lake area that, you know, the lake, you know, there's the bridge separates two bays, or, you know, the highway system. And there, you know, a lot of those are really good spring spots now, but you know, mom would drop us off at the bridge. No cell phones. If it rained, you went under the bridge.
Nice. <You know? laughs>
And, you know, we shore fished, and it was just something we did. We didn't always catch fish, but it was, we sure had some good memories doing that. So that's kind of where my passion grew from for fishing. And, you know, of course, graduated from high school, 1986, went to college at UND, and majored in public relations with a minor in marketing, and never any intention of getting into fishing, really. At that point in my career, I thought I wanted to work for a professional sports organization in the public relations department. Was kind of my aspiring dream then, but then I didn't like big cities either, so I kind of wanted that don't go well, right. Anyway, I ended up doing some I lived in Fargo after graduating from UND, and I worked for Fargo Moorhead Fever. It was a CBA basketball franchise. I started out as a Schwann man for 6 months. That was my first job out of college, and then the Fargo Dome was being built in Fargo at the time, and it was pretty exciting to see that thing being erected. And they had a press conference one day, and Eddie Schultz, the old radio sports guy in Fargo, he had a talk show and everything else. He could be quite controversial, actually, but a good guy. He was actually at this press conference, and they were announcing this new CBA basketball franchise, which the CBA is like an official developmental league for the NBA. I was never a basketball person, but more in hockey and football. But that was, you know, my goal was to work in sales and marketing and PR. That was what I needed to want, following my dream that way. And Eddie happened to live right next to one of my Schwann customers. So I actually knocked on his door and introduced myself to him, told him I wasn't here to sell you any Schwann food. I was just wanted to talk about this press conference. And he invited me in and gave me a tour of his basement. He had a radio studio in there at the time. And really was nice to me and gave me some good contact names. And these guys lived in Chicago that were bringing this team here. So I'm getting kind of sidetracked here, but
no, I like anyway, it. I feel I like up, it's definitely going to tie in because, you know, thinking about, you know, you got used to hustling up business. You got used to selling yourself and networking. Like, I feel like that this is definitely like my gears are already turning here that like you were already setting yourself up to be a successful entrepreneur.
Well, I didn't know it, but I was, I guess. But anyway, I ended up interviewing for the job. I didn't have any time to go put a suit and tie on. I had to wear my Schwann uniform and actually interviewed in Randy's restaurants in Fargo and actually sold the general manager a box of ice cream sandwiches.
There you go, man. You're just a salesman. Just a salesman.
So I ended up getting this job and you know, everything was pretty raw. You know, it was just sales were huge. We had to, you know, anything from program ads to signage in the Fargo Dome to season tickets to whatever, you know, whatever we could sell. And that was kind of how I started and had a really good guy there. Tim Burdon was the public relations and sales director. And I learned a lot from him, and I did that for about 2 years and then ended up applying for a job in Minot, North Dakota as the general manager on ice coordinator there. And you know, interviewed for that and I got that job. So moved to Minot, and at the time, it was probably the largest youth hockey program in the state, but it was the only one that wasn't funded by a Parks and Rec. So fundraising was very important for them, for that program. And so that's kind of why I got the job, was just my sales experience that I had learned in a couple of years and my education in public relations. So, but loved that job. The kids were great. You know, it just, I did that for, I think, 3 years and started to get kind of burnt out of that and thought I'd come back here and start farming. And I moved back to Devil's Lake and started ice fishing a lot. I had a lot of time in the winter, and that's kind of when Kyle Blanchfield, the owner of Woodland, and I reconnected, and he talked me into trying out guiding. He said, geez, you're on the water so much, on the ice so much, why don't you guide, you know? So I gave it a whirl, and it just, I fell in love with it. It's just love the people, love the relationship building part of it. And it just was, there were so many things that were, you know, the lake was starting to rise here at the time. It was in the 90s, and, you know, as the lake grew, the demand for a guide became more and more because, you know, it took a while for the number of fish to catch up to the size of the fishery. So as the lake grew, so did the demand, and ended up starting the Perch Patrol with Dave Tronson and Jim Legacy. They were a couple of guys that I met ice fishing, and they were interested in guiding as well. So we started running packages out of Woodland Resort. We had the Perch Express package where people come on the train. That was really a pretty cool deal. The novelty of heading west on a train and going ice fishing was, you know, the media loved it. It was an easy story for them to cover. My degree was in public relations, so it was, you know, it was easy to get a lot of attention with that package. So, and then the style of guiding, you know, that's kind of one thing that I think the Perch Patrol really brought into the industry was our style of guiding and using portables and moving people. And, you know, back then when we started, you know, our competition was basically, you know, somebody going out in a Bombardier renting a permanent house on Lake of the Woods. I mean, that was a guided ice fishing trip then. And we kind of took it up a notch by doing what we did. And it, you know, it just made for so much more of a successful fishing trip. Everybody, you know, got to go to where the best bites were. And of course we were scouting. That's still the most important thing we do as we're guiding is our scouting ability. And that's how new fish are found. And, you know, it was just kind of mushroom from there. And we came, I remember we did a Midwest Outdoors show And it was, I mean, we had 5 2-pound perch in 3 different segments. The fishing was that good. I mean, I could never do that again in my life.
Oh, man.
But it was, back then, outdoor television had a lot of power. And there wasn't, you know, a lot of outdoor TV. It was Tony Dean. You had In Fisherman. You had, you know, Babe Winkleman and maybe a few others. But that, it's not like now where it's, you know, you turn on YouTube and there's, you know, fishing shows all over. And it's so actually people back then would set their VCRs when one of these programs would air. So that those episodes we shot aired the following fall. And the phone at the Devil's Lake Chamber office at the end of the show, it was, you know, for more information, contact this 1-800 number and you'd Devil's Lake Chamber of Commerce and they'd send you a packet of information, you know, which we had our brochures in and stuff. So, I mean, it was, they had to bring in the board just to handle all, I mean, it was 5,000 calls a day coming.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it was just, wow. The impact of outdoor, that first one we did. And I remember we had to make up a name for our guide service. It's like, geez, I don't know. You know, we came up with Perch Patrol. Had it to do over again, I'd probably never name a guide service after a species of fish. But it had a nice little buzz to it, and it was easy for people to remember and catch on to it. And
yeah.
Started doing sports shows, and, back when we first started, we maybe guided 3 days out of 20, you know. We had to build the business up and being in partnerships with Woodland Resort was a great deal. We had a, you know, a good package that included all your meals, lodging and the guiding for like a, you know, a 2-day, 3-day, 4-day trip. And they of course stay at Woodland and the number one goal was to make it easy for people to come here. You know, we provided all the equipment and the gear. They didn't have to lug that along on the train and as the demand grew, we hired more guides and eventually we got to this guy we know as Jason Mitchell.
Oh yeah. And,
he was a very young man, very green, came here basically right out of high school. And, I think back to the vehicle he drove. We were all trying to, at that time we were taking 2 people per guide, and it's, we were thinking about getting to more of a crew cab pickup, where we could haul 4 and have 2 portables in the back we could double our capacity then, so it was, but crew cab pickups weren't that big of a deal back then. I mean, extended cabs were common, but it was, crew cabs were not easy to find. And he ended up buying this old diesel Ford crew cab pickup with like 300,000 miles on it. He bought it from a rancher who had pulled horse trailers all over the country. And this thing was on it. This truck was on its last leg.
Yeah.
He shut it off one time and we couldn't get it started the next day and he had to guide. And it was, I'm like, don't ever shut that truck off again all winter long. And he didn't. And he lived in the Woodland Motel then. I mean, he didn't have a place here or nothing. He was living in the motel. He'd park on one side of the motel and opposite his room, and the clients would complain to Kyle about this truck running. Sounds like Mitchell, don't it?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I feel like so much has changed, but so much hasn't. Like, getting back to like what year did you officially launch like the Perch Patrol? Like, what year was that like coined?
1995.
Thinking back, like what you said early on, you guys were a little bit special in how you, just how you fished. You know, did you kind of know already that you were offering something kind of special? Was that something you took pride in like day one, or was that kind of something that you evolved into? I'm kind of interested in those early stories of like success stories, the early success stories.
Well, immediately it comes to mind, we just started, this is just how we rolled, and there wasn't any specific plan that we were going to be any different. We just knew that being mobile and making it easy to be mobile, we were using 4x8 portables that we built. They were basically 3 sheets of plywood that were hinged, and then, the floor and the 2 walls, then the what enclosed it was a blue tarp that was, you know, stapled to the edge of the plywood sheets, you know. And I mean, you know, we had 2x2 runners below them and, you know, holes cut in the plywood on the floor. I mean, it was, you know, and we got pretty good at making those things how we wanted them. And, you know, some days when this wind is really wicked, I miss those things because you could always aim, you know, one of those hard sides, the plywood side, into the wind, and it wasn't, you know, it protected you a little bit, but they were heavy. They, you know, they would get waterlogged in the spring and they'd get even heavier. And I mean, they were, but it was still, you know, we made it work, you know, and I can remember, you know, if you're going to move the people just a short ways, we just let them sit in the house and we pulled it. We called them hut rides. We'd get out and go drill their holes for them and reset them, you know. And so I remember one guy looked at me and said, "I can tell you've never rode back there, have you?"
I said, yeah.
"No, I haven't."
Oh, man. But, I mean, you know, it's easy to sort of, like, this day and age, and I was actually talking to recently, I interviewed, like, Al Linder, of all people, right? You know, he's the king in the fishing industry. Like, he, you know, we were just reflecting on, and we were talking about more specific things, but just reflecting on the evolution of certain things, you know, tactics, lures, and presentations, and just fishing in general, how there's been, you know, all this evolution, you know, electronics and all this, like, fishing philosophy that, you know, some things are mainstays, some things have been around for a long time and they maintain their status, and other things, you know, we learn about fish, we learn about fishing, we learn new stuff, you know, gear, you know, new technology is developed, and then we kind of, you know, what we did 5 years ago, we don't do it all anymore. But, you know, for you guys, it's like a lot of what you were doing back then, you know, just your strategy and philosophy is what still sort of sets the standard today. I mean, a lot, like, fish houses are different, fishing rods are different. Mm-hmm. You know, the vehicles you drive are more reliable and those sort of things. So that's why we laugh, you know, when it's like you got that old pickup that won't start. Yeah. But realistically, like, you know, you guys and anybody else, you know, that was any other examples of it, it's like you guys were probably really, really on the cutting edge and still are to this day, like the team of guys you have now, like, you know, you got to take a little bit of pride in that. I mean, that, you know, that's just really good stuff.
Yeah, no, very, very much so. You know, something, hearing you talking makes me think my mind, you know, and it just takes off here, but I can, you know, I remember we first started guiding, we didn't hand out Vexlars to clients. I mean, I can't imagine how we pulled that off. You know, well, you got a feel for the bottom, you know, okay, now your line went slack. Okay. You want to, you know, raise it up about a foot, you know, and just hold it there and kind of shake it, but you gotta, you know, be still more than you're shaking it. And, you know, waiting for these bites and not knowing if there's fish there. And I just can't believe we were able to pull that off, but it was, you know, we had, the guides were using Vexlars. We had a Monador dash and, you know, we were pretty run and gun. And so it wasn't like we were setting them up blind. You know, we'd get a hot hole and we'd run back and get them and set them there. And, it, you know, that was kind of what we banked on, is those fish would still be there and biting. And I guess that's how we pulled it off. But getting back to when we realized we were kind of creating something a little special here as far as our guiding style, I probably didn't really think much about it until I had the good fortune of meeting Dave Gens on Black Tiger Bay on Devil's Lake. And I've seen this guy on this snowmobile, and he had some guys with him, and they had, you know, they had these fishing systems jackets on, and that was before, you know, the ice armor. This is, you know, they had an in fisherman patch on it. I mean, and it was obvious that, you know, Dave Gens had a long track snowmobile, that he had a 4x10 trailer that he hauled the snowmobile on, but he had that hooked up to a 2-inch ball on the back of the snowmobile, and these friends of his were riding actually on the trailer, And of course, Dave had his, you know, fish trap, and they had some fish traps on the trailer as well. And so it was, you know, this guy was like, that's somebody special. I mean, you could just notice that this, you know, it was like a sun rays hitting him. This guy is God over here. You know, I mean, he looked that much different. You know, he was very professional looking, and I went up and introduced myself to him, and we were having a really good day fishing, and, you know, we had a bunch of clients out there, and so I invited them over, and they fished with us, and it was the best thing I ever did. Dave Gens was a true professional. He walked around, introduced himself to all of our clients. You know, this is Mr. Ice Fishing, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I mean, can you imagine being on a trip and you know, this guy appears and he was handing out jigs and showing people how to jig with a certain, you know, with the little jigs that he was using. He was kind of sponsored by Systems Tackle back then, and he helped create a lot of these jigs that were more horizontal, like the Genswerm, the Fat Boy, and those kind of jigs that you don't hear so much about anymore. But so it was immediately, I mean, the guide day ended. We had a phenomenal day. Dave got on fish, his buddies got on fish, and Dave happened to be staying at Woodland, and I think Dave and I, not that we drank so much, we were just so, the conversation we had, we went out to dinner that night, and I'm still in my boots and bibs, and I don't think I went to bed that night. We stayed up till 4 a.m. talking ice fishing. Like, it was just intense, you know. And I remember I had to go because I, you know, the next train was coming in at 5:30, and we had to go people up at the train and on to the next day. And it was just, yeah, I mean, he was, but it was, he had never came across or seeing a guide service like this. And he was so impressed with, because Dave, you know, he preaches mobility, he always has. And we were doing that. And, you know, I used to really get, you know, listening to him speak and some of his seminars, he'd bring us up a lot. And I just get chills when he'd give us credit for some of this stuff. And he said, it's Devil's Lake's the first place where I went, where I learned something, you know, and it was like, wow, what an honor to hear that, you know? But it was, you know, I can't take all the credit for this. I mean, I have Dave Tronson, who's just a lake legend here in ice fishing. Jim Legacy was as well. And I got the good fortune of starting this business with these guys. And then, you know, after we met Dave was very instrumental in helping us. He went to Vexilar with me and introduced me to Steve Bauman, the owner of Vexilar, and ended up getting sponsored by Vexilar. And, you know, they sent us all these Vexilars to put in front of our clients and introduce them to them. And that, you know, that still is going on to this day, 29 years later. It was, you know, just that whole part of it, just, you know, it's pretty special time for me, because that was one of the, everybody talks about getting a break. That was kind of our break for the Perch Patrol.
Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. The spring open water fishing season is upon us here in North Dakota, and a few things to remember as anglers when we're getting our boat out for the first time, especially on the river systems: the dangerously cold water temperatures. Fishing is all about having fun. Some of the most phenomenal fishing opportunities are going to be happening now for the next couple of months. Be prepared for some of those mild emergencies. Definitely be wearing your life jacket. It can be life and death in a bad situation. Clean, drain, dry is always the program here in North Dakota. For new rules and regulations for the 2024 open water season, check all that out at North Dakota Game and Fish website, gf.nd.gov/fishing. And Gens is still like that. I mean, it's unreal. Like, that's how I am with you guys too. Like, when I hear this stuff about Devil's Lake, and I like hearing about the lake too, like the fishing. Like, you know, you've been around, you were fishing it professionally. You were a guide since the mid-90s. I mean, you know, the stories go on and on about Devil's Lake and how it grew during that time and all that stuff. Like,
What's your version of that story? What was the fishing like, both, you know, summer and winter? Like, what are the things that stick out to you as far as, like, you know, what you went through at your guide service, you know, fishing? What were the, you know, what were the areas and what were some of the patterns and bites that came and went that really stick out in your mind that are just fun stories to tell from, you know, the beginning?
Well, it's kind of interesting thinking about it because, you know, when I was young and fishing and in high school and, you know, fishing, of course we had played hockey, but we still ice fished a lot too, as much as we could. And, you know, we thought we had tremendous fishing back then. You always hear the boom of the 80s, right? So, and the perch numbers and stuff. And, you know, it was just in these big perch, you know, there was some phenomenal fishing that went on here before the lake grew, and it was almost an easier fishery to fish because it was so much smaller. I mean, it's, you know, it's four times bigger now than it was then. You know, you had, you know, back then Creel Bay was 19 to 20 feet deep, and now it's, you know, 45 feet deep. You know, a lot easier catching fish out of 19 feet of water than it is 45 feet of water here. But, you know, that it you know, in the schools of fish back then, it just seemed like they didn't end. You know, I mean, you could almost watch the crowds of people and, you know, watch for bent rods and detect where the school of the fish was going. And we don't have big schools like that anymore. But, I mean, it's just so much more water for them to swim in. So I remember growing up here thinking we have a phenomenal fishery. So now we're in the 90s and we're getting this guide service rocking and rolling. And you know, the lake is just changing so much every year. Like 97, we had a 7-foot vertical rise in 2 months in the spring. You know,
that's, I mean, unreal.
You know, and that happened a couple times where it's like, you know, 6-7 foot vertical rises. And, you know, they couldn't move homes and cabins fast enough. You know, there's just a lot of, you know, uncertainty and but, you know, the benefit was all these new areas to explore. And that's, you know, getting into Mitchell's start, you know, we'd probably been rolling about 5 or 6 years before we ever brought Jason Mitchell aboard. But you know, he was a young gun. You know, we were all young, but I mean, you know, he was an explorer, man. I mean, it was going to, you know, driving to, everything's white in the winter, right? And, you know, he's looking at lake maps, but the water goes beyond the lake maps. And it just seemed like the new fish, you know, the fish that we had always liked the new water. You know what I mean? Whether it was a back bay or a new slough that had joined up with the lake. I mean, it was that's what made it fun, though, was the exploration that we had to do. And you know, all these new bays and new bodies of water got names, and it was, you know, it was a lot of those names came from what a certain tale that happened when we first found fish there, you know. I mean,
was that easy to learn, though? Like, You know, like we think about, we still talk about stuff like that, water fluctuating, especially on reservoirs, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like that, you know, water fluctuation. But Devil's Lake is such a unique thing, being it's like closed basin. It's like, you know, it's right. Kind of a one of a kind, certainly in the Midwest. But I think those are the fun stories of like all that new water. Jason always says that. He's like, all that new water was just, that was the deal. Was that easy to learn? Like, do you remember the shift in that? Like the first time that you just started, you know, you just pulled your boat in over the top of, you know, something that was dry land last year? Like what were the techniques that you were trying at that time? Like what were some of those things that were clicking and you were getting confidence? Like, was it easy confidence to get going into that unknown stuff?
Well, there was a lot of uncertainty with it. You know, you didn't dare, you know, put your boat on plane. You know, I remember the first time we were able to cross the Golden Highway, you know, to get on the north side of the Golden Highway. It was just a little area that was a little more deeper, you know, the road had, maybe it was an old culvert or something, but you could go next to this mile marker sign and just barely get over that road. And now you're in a whole new area. You know, like, wow, okay, now what? You know, but the water just went on, you know, as far as the eye could see. But, you know, you didn't know what reefs were there. You didn't know, you know, you just kind of had to put your way through it until you got confidence enough to you watch the depth a lot. And it was, it was a lot of that, you know, trying to get, you know, all of us back then. I mean, we've all had an experience or two where we were, you know, boat beached on top of a road. <You know>? Hey, I need a pole over here.
Yeah. I mean, what were the techniques? Was it just, this day and age, we've got all the new gadgets and gear, probably so much into even a small boat nowadays that we wouldn't dare like risk going over something. I mean, you guys were, you know, I don't want to oversight that. You guys were, you know, it probably looked like a lot of fun, but you were risking. I mean, you know, your boat was like your livelihood. So it's like, that's like a big deal to kind of, you know, do some of those things for the first time, you know, on a personal level. But I think about like the fishing of like, you know, when you're going into some of that new water, you don't know exactly what the contours are. Was it a lot of, did you have to go in and just drive around a lot?
Yeah, we drove around a lot. Yeah, we did a lot of casting back then. And, you know, we still did a lot of anchoring and slip bobbering too, depending on the time of year. But, you know, back then there was so much more flooded timber. You know, a lot of that timber you don't see anymore because it's, you know, the ice takes it out every year. And, you know, but it was a lot of kind of monkey fishing. You'd, you know, trim up your big motor and use your bow mount and go through this jungle of trees, you know. It was, and then you'd tie to these trees and slip bobber, and you'd, you know, what you learned was you got, you know, if you did that a lot, you'd start to figure out the certain pathways through these trees that the fish would kind of take, you know, the little roads down there that they would run. And, you know, one day the wind would be out of this way and you'd have to, you know, tie to maybe to a different tree, but you wanted your bobbers in those same roadways, you know. So the more you did it, like, it's like anything else, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And I remember doing that a lot back then in the summer. It was just a lot of tree fishing, you know, and that was pretty new to us because we never had flooded timber before, you know. So
I mean, was there any examples of that, like anywhere that you read an article to, like, I mean, this was all a lot of just, you were cutting your teeth.
Yeah. Well, we went from a weed line lake to a flooded timber lake, you know, all the weed lines kind of were flooded and gone. And now it was all about the flooded timber. And I suppose it was the same way for the fish too, you know? So I can think of stories of Mitchell. I remember he had a client, and he had the client go up to the bow, and he was going to have him tied to this tree, and you know, it was kind of choppy, and Mitchell's in a little tiller boat. This guy is trying to tie this rope around this tree, bear hugging this tree, and all of a sudden the boat pulls away from the tree. There's this guy holding on to this tree, and Mitchell's like 20 feet away from him, you know. Hey, get back here.
Like a koala bear just sitting there.
Yeah, he was hugging it like a koala bear, you know.
Oh, no. That's it. I feel like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I feel like stuff like that, you know, he's asking me to do that stuff in the boat all the time too. Now it's like, he hasn't changed a bit. It could be choppy. There could be, you know, he'll be like, hey, why don't you go up there? Like, what's the most dangerous thing I can ask somebody to do right now? Yeah, and right. Justify it in no way, shape or form. Okay. Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. Like, he just, oh, that is hilarious though. But I mean, dude, I think that's, I mean, I just love those kind of stories, man. I mean, that's, I mean, and the lake has evolved even today. I mean, we could spend 3 hours. I mean, I spend hours, you know, every season on this podcast interviewing, you know, everybody about Devil's Lake, you know, all the fun things we talk about to this day. But it's like, but thinking back on some of that stuff, it's like, I wish there was a podcast back then where you guys were documenting this stuff on a weekly, a monthly basis back then for those years, because, man, I imagine, like, you know, all the stuff that, all the experiences and the clients that you've almost, you know, probably forgot about by now. I mean, that stuff would just be fascinating. I don't know if it'll ever happen again somewhere, like in our lifetime.
Yeah, it was,
but interesting stuff.
I mean, you just don't hear a lake quadrupling in size and, you know, and just, you know, it, no doubt it caused a lot of heartache for the, you know, the farmers, the homeowners, the, you know, there was a lot of that. And, you know, just the infrastructure of the city of Devil's Lake had to be, you know, the roads had to be raised and the, you know, the lift stations for sewers. And I mean, you name it, it had to be, you know, raised up. But, you know, the one thing we didn't really, you know, we were worried about the, you know, the numbers of fish in the lake because of all this new water. And, you know, that was kind of all of an unknown. And what we did not know back then is the true gift of all that water was the, when the water levels were low, the salinity, the salt content in the water was extremely high, and our natural reproduction on the lake was not really happening very good because of all that salinity level.
Yeah.
And what was happening with all this new water is it was diluting that salt content way down, and you know, our water quality got a lot better, and natural reproduction just took off like beyond belief. And of course, anytime you have, you know, grasses and things on shore that are flooding, and you know, the spawning habitat that was created, you know, it was just, I mean, phenomenal what it did for the lake and the fishing. And it was that, you know, we didn't know that at the time, but you know, looking back, that was a big deal to really make putting Devil's Lake on the map, and you know, our walleye population, our pike population. I mean, you know, and there were some years where our perch numbers were not very good back in like the early 2000s. You know, here we are, the perch patrol, and we got people riding trains from all over the country, and we're not about perch right now. You know, it was, you know, and, but you know, we pulled it off, and you know, that was a lot of exploring to, you know, I remember the northern fishing was so good. We didn't even use tip ups. I mean, it was, you just jig for them, you know, and you know, somebody would come out there and put tip ups out, and you're like, no, don't fish by me. You know, you wanted to be the only thing to eat in that area, you know, and that's what kept the jigging good, you know, is it, you know, but yeah, it was, those were good times. I mean, it was, wouldn't trade them for the world.
Yeah. The funny stories, you know, just the entertaining stories about just how you guys operated back then. You know, we laugh about them now, but realistically going through, you probably had some times or some years or just some instances where you just thought, man, maybe I could just sell out and go do something easier than this.
Well, I think the camaraderie of it all, the challenge of it all, you know, it was the exploration, you know, it was, we all had passion, and it was just, you know, the clients could see it. It was contagious, you know, they could sense it. And it was just, you know, and we kept growing as our demand kept growing. We kept adding new guides, and we were, you know, both Jason and I were very, very good at getting really good guides. and that's, you know, the key to anything is surrounding yourself with great people. And, you know, it's, you know, guiding isn't for everybody. I mean, there's, you name it, it's happened. There's plenty of days where things have, you know, the wheels have fallen off.
And, oh man, and, I bet.
And I could go on and on about some of the things that didn't go good, but it, you know, it's just, you know, not everything works when it's 28 below zero, you know.
Yeah.
Augers don't start, and yeah, it's getting stuck a lot of snow. We didn't have tracks back then, so you know, we would chain up our tires, and you know, you can have the confidence to try a lot of exploration and through, you know, Baja and through a lot of snow when you know you've got four or five other guys with chained up tires, and they can come snatch you out, you know. So that right there gives you advantage, you know, the teamwork that went into that. You know, and that's how we kept finding new areas and more fish. And that was a big key to it all, was just having the, you know, the teamwork approach to a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, and there wasn't a, you know, I've heard these stories. I've actually asked Jason about this, and I think he likes talking about it. But like, you know, for you, like, there wasn't a lot of examples, if any examples at all, of like a team of guides, at least of that caliber or that size. Like you guys had a network that was varsity level. How would you articulate some of that, the stories and the decision making when you were assembling your team of Avengers, so to speak?
Well, it's, you know, I can remember a time when, you know, geez, we were way up north and we were, you know, basically went off the highway onto a part of the lake and, you know, stuck three times and, you know, pulling each other out. And I remember like the four-wheel drive adventure that was involved in a lot of those things where, you know, you'd never want to own a truck after we had them. I'll tell you that. But I remember getting out and I was like, oh, I'm so sorry, guys. I had no idea it'd be this much hell getting here, but hopefully the fishing will be worth it. And I remember this like 80-year-old man in my back seat going, oh, Sonny, I've already got my money's worth already. Oh, you don't care if I catch one. I haven't had that much fun.
That's so awesome.
I didn't even think of that. Oh my God. Yeah. This guy's had a carnival ride, hasn't he?
Yeah.
but no, it was, you know, and the teamwork thing is just, you know, just the conditions we face. It's not always about, you know, about the fishing part. It's just getting, you know, having backup, to having a wingman along to pull you out. If you know, it gives you more confidence to try things. You know what I mean? And that's, we were young and dumb enough to try real hard at things. So, but that's what, you know, it was, you know, not that we intended it, but you know, we wanted to grow our business and we wanted these people to come back, and we really, you know, strive to give them 100% effort. And that's kind of how she was built, you know. And I've, you know, I still guide people that I've had, you know, for over 20 years, and, you know, unfortunately a lot of people die too, but you know, it's always fun to have some of them back, and we talk about old times. And
this might be hard for you to think of, and I mean, I gotta keep it, you know, somewhat, you know, regulated on, we can go PG-13, I'd say, but what would be your best, like Mitchell story between you and him, like, looking back, you know, I really like the early days especially, but it can be anything. What comes to mind, like a fishing story, you know, you and Mitchell just really, you know, like in your prime, early in your career, like one of the best but most funny days. Like what would be a good Mitchell story between you two guys fishing?
Well, when I think back to Jason being young and just starting out, you know, just the challenges, you know, he didn't have a lot of money. He was, you know, buying a truck with 300,000 miles on it and living in Woodlands Motel, and you know, in the summertime, he kind of lived in the campground, and but he was always a real likable guy, you know, and you know, people always, you know, he has them, you know, he bats them eyes at you, and the naiveness of him makes you just love the guy, you know. but you know, he was very hungry, and he really wanted to. He had the passion. And he really wanted to do well, you know, and this is, you know, there was no looking back for him. This was what he wanted to do, you know, and it was, you know, the Dave Trance and the Jim Legacy, the guys that I started the business with, they were, you know, twice my age. So Jason, you know, he's kind of more closer to my age, you know, he's about 7 years younger than me, but, you know, it was to see his passion. And, you know, the meeting Dave Gans, the, you know, getting involved with, you know, Vexilar and Clam, and, you know, started going to sports shows. We were very fortunate to have our local Chamber of Commerce really wanted to push fishing and hunting here. So they were bringing in a Tony Dean to, you know, do a fishing show or a Midwest Outdoors to, you know, they're paying them to come in and film. And we got in on the ground floor of a lot of that. And, you know, you talk about building relationships, you know, Jason and I could countless nights. I mean, we fish all day and then we'd go out and eat with these guys, you know, at night and in our boots and bibs. And, you know, I could still smell Mitchell's fart from me that he let go and then breathe. And them bibs from 10 this morning, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Probably
smell the best. But you know, that's what it took. And then the next day you're out filming again. And, you know, it's just we were entertainers to them. And, you know, we throughout that, we built enough, you know, rapport and relationships with them that, you know, well, look at where Jason, he bought Tony Dean's show, you know, and look all that thing. Look where he is now, you know. So,
well, yeah, I mean, you know, your business too, like in the first 5 years of guiding and, you know, seeing some growth and getting a feel for the fishing and kind of getting in your groove. Did you assume, did you even think that this was going to be what you were going to do for 30 years or, you know, I mean, like,
yeah. No, not at all. It just kept growing and growing. And, you know, the more, and I loved the PR part of it and the marketing part of it. I loved, you know, creating new brochures and, you know, getting ramped up to go to sports shows. And, you know, once you've done enough of them sports shows, you get to know all the vendors there too. And it's like a family reunion when you go back there now, you know, and it's, cause it's the same people. And ice fishing, especially, it's such a, so many, you know, mom and pop, you know, little gizmos and products and, you know, and those are cool people and they all have very interesting stories behind what they did and how they developed what they were doing. And it's just that's what's so neat about ice fishing. It's such an innovative industry. And, but, you know, and Jason started doing seminars at these shows and, you know, he was writing for Dakota Country back then too. And, you know, that's kind of why Tony liked him so much, because not only did he fish, but he hunted and he was a good writer and you know, just, that's what I miss about Jason not guiding now, is just somebody to share that passion and bounce ideas off of. I mean, we you know, you talk about Dave Gens and I talking for hours that night. It was the same with Mitchell and I, you know, we had that much, you know, passion for what we did and we loved it. And it was not just the fishing, but the whole industry part of it and in the business of it. And it's just, yeah, that was the first guy that, you know, that I had kind of met that really, you know, I've, you know, shared that bond with, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, you know, you said it earlier and I picked up on it and I think it's true. I think it's really relatable on different levels with everybody that has like their crew of, you know, fishing partners, your fishing buddies, whatever it is, giving each other confidence. You know, when you were building that team together, like you guys were, I can just close my eyes and imagine it, like how everything you were doing or trying, spots you were trying, like concepts, theories, like those are still the things that drive the industry today, that drive, you know, the top level of anglers. You're constantly thinking about new stuff and new places to try, new places to go, or, you know, whatever it is, right? Like those are the things that really trip the trigger of, you know, the most dedicated anglers out there, you know, professional or not, you know, just anybody. And just when you got a group of guys around you that give you confidence to try new things and everybody's rooting for you, it's like a, you know, it's like a real team.
And I there was just so many things that just happened to fall in our laps too. Like, you know, like you talked about the, you know, back then the PWT and the RCLs, that was the, you know, the professional walleye tournaments in the summer back then. And those things back in, you know, they kind of boomed in their 90s. And then like early 2000s, that recession that everybody experienced, that was really hard on the fishing tournament industry. They lost a lot of sponsorship and prize money and stuff. And it just, a lot of those, you know, big time professionals that you read about and in fishermen all the time, that, you know, they were all of a sudden second guessing and trying to find something else to do. And some of them wanted to get into guiding. That's where Tom Backer came from, who's still with us today. Pete Harsh, you know, I remember, really, Pete Harsh is going to work with us? What? Mitchell found him, you know, and Pete became one of my best friends, and God rest his soul. I miss him every day, but had the good fortune of learning from him for 9 years when he was with us. And, you know, now we have Corey Springle with, you know, his winter guide for the Perch Patrol. And, you know, it's just the bigger we got, the easier it got to attract, you know, maybe not that, I mean, local guides are great too, because they know the area, and there's a lot of things that, you know, somebody from out of the area moving here has to learn. But you know, there's, and you know, it's just a lot of things that went well, you know, that just fit in that really were unintentional.
Yeah, man. I mean, the stories are endless. We're never going to be able to, you know, entirely get through it. One thing I was curious about, or I was going to ask you probably a long time ago in this conversation, but like, you know, at what point in time in your guide career did you stop entertaining like other jobs? Like that had to have been a thing, right? Like, you know, there's always like, you know, in any entrepreneur's career, like, do you feel like you went into this day one, but you know, when you signed on that dotted line, like this was going to be your deal, or was it 5 years in before you truly knew like, okay, this is what we got? Like at what point in time was there, you know, any other offer that you just weren't listening to because you felt like you guys really, you know, had yourselves established?
Well, I don't know when that was, but I do know, and I still feel this today, I don't know how I'd ever get out of this. because the customers, you know, thank God the customers just keep coming back. And it's, you know, like, right now, I'm still taking ice fishing reservations for next season. Like, how do you stop this? You know what I mean? Like, there's no easy exit strategy out of this. Like, it's like a revolving door. It just keeps turning. which is great. And that is the, you know, that's been earned. It's by not just me, everybody, and Mitchell included. It's, you know, it's providing that level of entertainment year after year, and the fishing and the stories and the adventures. And it's been a great ride, and I don't ever want it to end, you know? So yeah. I don't know when the magic time was when I realized that, but yeah, I think back 20 years and I don't think I've ever even thought of another job. you know? So, I mean, it just,
yeah, man, yeah. The camaraderie, the relationships. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the fishing, when you get into deep into these kind of conversations, the fishing is always completely secondary. Like you're going to forget 99% of the hook sets you've ever had. But, right. But yeah, you remember 99% of the people and the experiences, you know, especially the good ones. Yeah. I like that stuff, man. I like it. Well, Zippy, I knew this would happen. I mean, this is something where we just want to do one of these and just really have, you know, just really kind of share those stories. I just think like in the few years of doing this podcast even, and I'm so new to everybody and, you know, working with Jason the last few years, and I guess that time has flown by too because it's over 10 years now, but, you know,
but you've got to love what you do. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you
like
you're looking to, you know, you just interviewed Al Linder, you know, I mean, like,
I'm in the twilight zone, honestly, like it's total twilight zone, but
how it was for us.
I feel just as twilight zone. I feel like I'm still like I'm in a wormhole when we're over at the shop, you know, and it's, you know, you got Bruce Bonzer and Jason sitting there and I'll just start hitting them. And, you know, an hour will go by where we're so unproductive, but I will just ask those guys these types of questions. And I love the stories, and I just wish, you know, we're lucky to have this type of media nowadays, and it's popular. It's fun for people to listen to, and it is educational. It's how, you know, talking about, you know, the history of some of this stuff, it's important in a lot of ways, but just that documentation, it's so, you know, I just wish, we always just wish, you know, we wish there was TV shows 30 years before there was TV shows. We wish there was podcasts 30 years before there was podcasts, because these interviews, you know, where we're not on a time constraint, we can tell it like it was and we can share the real details. Like, man, it's just, you know, we have it now. So we just got to tell these stories and tell as many of them as we can possibly remember, as well as we can possibly remember them, and then they'll live so much longer. Right. But yeah, I love it. Well, I've got a whole bunch of, I mean, we're going to do this again because I want to talk, you know, we're kind of reminiscing about the old times. I definitely want to get into some more stories, you know, as time went on. And when you guys got a little bit older, a little more seasoned, the lake come up mm-hmm. a little bit, the fishing was changing a lot. I got mm-hmm. a lot more questions on that regard, too. So we'll have to, I'll be calling you again here down the road sometime, maybe this fall sometime when it works out. And we'll do this again, man. But, dude, for that, unless something is just eating at you and you want to throw something else out there, I think we can kind of sign it off. I would say, like all of these, you know, this is the first time having you on. So, you know, if people do want to follow along, you know, your guide service is alive and well. If anybody's curious about a guide trip or has questions about Devil's Lake, summer or winter, where can people find you? What would be some content you want to promote, anything like that, man? Go ahead.
Well, perchpatrol.com is our website. We have all our information, packages, pricing, all that's on there. We have an availability calendar. You can just click on it and any day that you're looking at, a time period you're looking at, and see what we have available. It's either number of boats available or number of people, number of spots available in the wintertime. So that takes a lot of guesswork out of things, and a lot of people are using that, so it's nice when they call and they yeah, I was looking at your calendar, we'd like to book this and this, and boom, it's done, it's fast, it's quick. You know, Woodland Resort, and they have a great website too, woodlandresort.com. Facebook, Perch Patrol Guide Service on Facebook. Yeah, or give me a call, 701-351-3474.
There it is, man. Dang, Zippy, I appreciate it, man. I love reminiscing. Oh, I know you like it too. Everybody does, right? Like when we're talking fishing.